Dear Shooter, we are back in Raton, New Mexico for Ballistic Summit, so it's that time of year when we get to talk to great new people with great new products, and of course, have fun making new friends.
It's not about protecting the stupid, it's just, it is what it is.
I don't know if you know this, but I'm a self-identifying llama. And it's because I have a quick temper and I like to spit.
You are not safe, and you are not sacred, and you're both liars.
We're talking about firearms, y'all.
Keep it clean.
I can hide one under there.
One what? I want to know.
I looked like I got ran over by a paint truck on the way to Sherwin-Williams and then backed over by the short bus.
You know, let's talk about the modern trends in transsexual transitions.
Welcome to the Dear Shooter Podcast. Dear Shooter is brought to you by WyoTech, empowerment through self-reliance, and by Lucid Optics, on target, under budget.
Okay, so we're here today, we're at Ballistic Summit, and right now we've got Marissa Bishop, Bishop Ammunition and Firearms, and we've got Chris. Chris, you're the engineer behind a lot of this stuff, correct?
More the gunsmith, I'm the one that builds it, designs it.
Okay, all right. So, talk to me a little bit first before we get into the guns. Talk to me about the dynamic of the company, because I watched you guys come out of California. Now you're in eastern Idaho?
Yes, we're in Pocatello right
okay.
now.
And how's that move been for you?
I feel like I stepped back home.
Back to free America.
Yeah, we came from the Bay Area, Sacramento. I had a law practice there for 32 years. I got sick of it to the point where I could not even go into my office anymore. And so we decided to relocate. We looked at multiple different places, you know, places like Lordsburg, Lone Pine, Fallon, Nevada, and Goldfield even. Mm-hmm. But we showed up here because at SHOT Show for 3 years in a row, Idaho would come and talk to us and try and talk us into at least taking a look at them. So I said, okay, fine. Let's go for a drive, check it out, and see what we find. Came up to Pocatello, and I felt like I stepped back into Orange County in 1978.
Okay.
I literally felt like I had come home. The people are polite. They're nice. They're not rude. They help. I can go into the store, and some random gentleman will just open the door for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you don't see that where I'm from.
Not in California, no.
No, absolutely not. But now we have we moved the firearms company and ammunition company to our other facility in Pocatello, Idaho. I purchased and reopened Doc's Gun Barn on Jefferson Avenue. They were closed for 4 years, and the owner, his wife, made him retire for medical reasons, and he just locked up and walked out.
Mm-hmm.
Left everything there. I came and made him an offer. He said yes, and I have my first gun store.
Perfect.
As a result, I hired Chris. It was one of the best decisions that I had ever made.
Don't make her regret it.
I'm trying.
And we have my manager, Butch, and I can't run the store without him. I'm glad he's back after a long-term illness. And we're all veterans in the store. And then we also have just brought on another employee. He is a Marine, so we forgive him. Donnie Owens.
Nobody's perfect.
No, Donnie's great. He's a young kid, and he's a definite asset to our company. And he works directly under Chris.
So how long has Bishop Ammunition been a thing? I mean, I noticed you guys probably 7 years ago.
January 2009.
Okay.
That's when we started.
So I wasn't too far behind the curve.
No. We started out making just one cartridge, 45 auto.
Okay.
And I kind of stumbled into it about a 1911. There was no ammo available anywhere. So spoke with my old man. He was a Marine too. And he told me, look, this is my formula. Don't go buy it. Try a couple of different powders and find one that works best in your gun and keep it that. That's your formula.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I did that, and eventually my groups got smaller and smaller and smaller. And then at the range, people were like, how are your groups getting so small? And I told them, they go, well, we'd like to buy some. That led to a license, which led to a warehouse, which led to two presses, which led to five presses, which led to two Chemdexes, and it snowballed from there.
As it should.
And so now we make anywhere from 45 auto, 9mm, 38 special, 357, 45 Colt, 458 SOCOM, and 38-55 and 30-30 ammunition. And we basically use the idea that my dad, if you're going to do it, you do it once or you don't do it at all.
Right. Right.
And that's what we try and strive for our company. If we have a problem in a product that we're making, we bring a screeching halt to it, figure out what's wrong with it, work through it, and then move on with it.
And I'm guessing that's where you come in.
Yep.
You get to troubleshoot this stuff and figure it out.
Yeah, that's pretty much, and she's always throwing a curveball at me, but yes.
Well, yeah, and I've made the comment to several people. I mean, I love you, Marissa, but you are kind of a masochist with this big bore stuff. I mean, I love it. And I have to admit, like, we were in Africa earlier this year.
Yeah.
And we went on a Cape Buffalo hunt, and I was like, man, that 475 would be perfect.
I have one firearm in the 475 short magnum in Africa. It's a bolt action.
Mm-hmm.
And the review of the guide said he's only had to actually use it once against a dangerous game. It was a Cape Buffalo. The customer of his that he was helping get the animal wounded it.
Oh.
And, of course, it charged. He said he fired one round. It was a 390 grain copper hollow point, cutting edge, makes the bullet for us of my design. He said that when it entered the skull, it detonated the skull on break.
Oh, that's perfect.
It just turned it to jello. Then the rest of the cartridge, which was basically a tumbling 20 gauge copper slug, was in the right rear rump of the animal.
Okay.
Hit the ground, slid, and didn't even twitch. When he told me the story, I said, well, what did you think of it? He said, it was the most brutal thing I've ever shot in my life.
No, Diane was telling me something about that earlier, that you made the one and you sold it, and that you will not make another one.
Oh, no, it's absolute complete punishment. I mean, the gun puts out 5,000 foot-pounds of muzzle energy. It throws a 390-grain
okay.
bullet. I even put two mercury recoil reducers in it. Mm-hmm. And I was good four rounds, and I had to quit.
Right. It's like somebody hitting you in the shoulder with a sledgehammer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the recoil impulse on that, I'm sure, is insane. Because the 475 out of the AR that's got the gas, and it's got some recoil reduction built into the gun, even that's kind of punishing.
Well, I designed the...
as Chris is showing me the bruising.
Well, you got bruises, I don't. I know how to shoot it.
You're wearing an extra pad under there.
True. That's why I run this store. But the AR-475 GAR is now in a side charger configuration. Our upper's made by Gibbs. We're no longer using forged. The firearm today is our prototype that we had using a forged lower. Now everything we do is billet and CNC machine by me.
Okay.
In-house. It feels more like a 12-gauge, 3-inch magnum shoving into you.
Mm-hmm.
If you hold the weapon the way I explained to you.
I noticed that. When I didn't quite have it shouldered properly, it was a sharp bite. But when I did have it shouldered, it was more of a push. Almost reminded me of 50 cal.
Yeah. Yeah. And the firearm is purposely made heavy. It weighs around 12.5 pounds.
Okay.
For an AR-10.
That is heavy. But you know what?
The heavy buffer and the heavy duty setup that we have for it too also helps tremendously with reducing that impact on you.
Right.
So it's really actually not bad to shoot.
Okay, so Chris, get into the gun.
Well,
when you shoot it 50 times in a row, it starts to kind of leave a mark.
Well, you shot it like 30 times today. Of course you got a bruise. But we were able to accomplish something with the firearm that it really was not designed to do. The cartridge is really only a 900 to 1,000 yard round.
Right.
But today we were killing the white buffalo at 1,300 yards.
Yeah.
And I came close to hitting it offhand.
You did. I watched that, and it was within inches.
Now, so with the cartridge itself, the projectile goes subsonic at 700 yards.
Right. So you've got, you're 500 yards where it's tumbling.
But the problem is that the energy that it's expending at that distance, if it were to hit at 1,300 yards, we're still around 600 feet per second with about 400 foot-pounds of energy.
Yeah. I don't want to get hit with that. It cut me in half. I mean, for our listeners, you know, putting that in perspective, that's 45 Colt point blank.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I've tested our 45 Colt ammo that we make for Cowboy Action on a 250 grain bullet on an FBI gel block point blank. It will blow completely through and not even slow down.
Right. Right. So. Yeah, think about that at 1,300 yards coming out of this gun. I mean, and it's tumbling and it's already doing nasty things. It would cut you in half.
Oh, you missed it last night, though. We had two pumpkins, Kevin and Bob. And Kevin and Bob were put out at about 75 yards, and they were filled with water. Okay. One was tomato juice and one was water. And Chris was doing the shooting. We did a ranging shot on a 2-gallon jug of water, and it basically became a fountain and vaporized and did the same thing to the watermelons.
I kind of want to go take that out and do prairie dogs.
You just get a red blur.
Exactly.
It vaporized.
But it's clean.
You get little feet laying there.
It's like the shoes left on the pavement after an accident. Yeah.
Yeah. Once you shoot it, you pretty much just wait for the pumpkin or whatever to fall. That's how you know you hit it, because everything's just gone by the time you see.
You go up to it, and it's just the front face of it.
Pretty much.
Everything behind is gone.
Yeah, well, we do have it on video, and it's an insanely fun firearm to shoot, and it has absolutely no purpose but to destroy stuff.
Okay, at the end of the day, what is the purpose of a firearm? It's to kill things, right? I mean, really.
Oh, yeah.
So for you to say that's not a stretch. I mean, I remember at one point Ronnie Barrett getting up in an Outdoor Channel meeting and screaming at them going, what do you think we make these for? They are to break things and kill people.
Well, I have tested the firearm on up to 8 inches of concrete, and it has shot through it. We did not recover the projectile.
Whew.
I've tested it on 12 gallons of water. It blew through it, vaporized the first four, did not recover the projectile. I finally found something that would stop it, which was 24 inches of pine at 200 yards.
Okay.
At 20-inch portion of the log, it shot through and had a 6-inch exit hole.
So you were showing me around today, and you said it was solid copper.
Yes.
Now the difference between that and the look, they look like they were lead soft nose.
Well, they're a lead jacketed lead hollow point.
Okay.
We were shooting projectiles by cutting edge and also precision cartridge. Not precision cartridge. I'd have to look it up. Andy owns it. He's on the East Coast. Hawk Precision is the name
of
the company. Yep. And they're 390. They're both specifically made for me. I designed both of them.
So, Chris, tell me how you fit into all of this madness. I mean, I know you have to fix all the problems. You have to figure it out, troubleshoot, and fix it. So, beyond that, what else do you do besides get punished?
A little bit of everything. I got hired on as a gunsmith. I retired from the military. Literally saw a newspaper article. She was opening up a store.
Army, I'm assuming.
Right.
Okay, good boy.
And then,
because if you were going to say Air Force, I was really going to give you crap.
Nope. So when I retired, I went to SDI. And before I even had my degree in my hand from them, she opened the store. So I bugged her and her spouse nonstop until somebody gave me an answer.
And that's how I got her to Summit. Yeah. I even got Bane involved in that one.
It worked. Yeah. But from there, it's been moved around a lot. I was started out as gunsmith. I've managed the store. I do a lot of the traveling with her now. A lot of the promotional type stuff, YouTube, things like this. And yeah, so a little bit of any hat she tells me to wear.
Perfect.
Well, there is a gun that he was directly involved in our development that we shot today. You saw me shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
We've come out with a new firearm called Exodus.
Mm-hmm.
And
it
is a 10-millimeter AR-15 that handles and shoots like it's a Thompson machine gun.
Mm-hmm.
I designed the barrel. I designed pretty much the entire gun. I machined the lower myself. The uppers are by Gibbs. Again, it's side charging. And even though it's a 10 millimeter carbine round, I was still able to hit a 530 yard target on it offhand.
Right, right. And I was watching you do it. I mean, we were chickens at like 300 yards and with repeatable accuracy. I'm actually really excited about this, and something that we're going to get questions on is, when is this going to be available?
It's available right now.
There you go. See?
We offer it in two forms. We offer it in a rifle version. I've figured out how to run a pistol cartridge in an AR rifle, not a carbine. So you can have the full-length stock. You can have a weapon that is kind of like an intermediate. It's not a carbine. It's not like an M16.
Right.
It's a little bit shorter than an M4, but it has the full-length rifle stock. And it comes with wood furniture by Boyd's.
Yep.
And that's, you choose what you want, and you choose the color of Cerakote you want on the firearm.
Okay.
The only color, that only option on it really is a folding stock adapter, which adds $200 to the price of the firearm.
Okay.
Of which we can do it with a full-length rifle stock or the carbine. And if we go with the carbine, it's a little bit more expensive because we use the furniture from Wooks.
Okay. So, I'm guessing, just because of my impressions, people are going to look at that. That's probably the way they're going to go, is the carbine version, because that's what people know. That's what they like. So the carbine version with the Wooks, what are we looking at MSRP?
With folding stock?
With and without.
Okay.
You said the folding stock is about $200 more?
Yeah. Without the folding stock, because of the Wooks furniture, we're about $2,100.
That's not bad.
And then you add on the folding stock adapter. And then, again, any color, standard Cerakote that you want. But if you want the FX, it's another $250. I can make it any color you want but pink. I don't do pink.
No pink? No.
I do not do pink.
Thank God. But you're actually – but the thing about it is, I'd love to see you do one in pink, and I know I get it. But all of these companies make pink guns in guns that women hate to shoot.
The little tiny ones that you can't even hang on to.
Yeah, exactly.
They look good, though.
Well, they think, oh, a little pocket pistol, yeah, it's cute, right? But they're experts' guns. People don't understand that.
Yep.
The barrel itself I designed on Fusion 360. I was going to pull it up in the other area of the building and show how it was designed. And it comes in a polished stainless. We can actually Cerakote it any color you want or do black oxide.
Ooh, that'd be pretty.
The compensator that we have for it, I designed. It looks exactly like the Thompson machine gun compensator. And the weapon that you fired, if you noticed the forward grip, it was identical to the pistol grip.
Yep, yep.
That's on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
I'm of the belief, and Chris is that you should not have to be forced to use someone else's idea of what a pistol forward grip should be.
Right.
So I designed a bracket. We spent 5 days searching the internet for a comparable bracket that allows any AR-15 non-beaver tail pistol grip to act as a forward grip.
Okay.
And because it's M-LOK and we're licensed by M-LOK, you can put it anywhere on the handguard you want.
The nice thing about the Exodus is the barrel itself. It's designed in a way to not only stay cooler as you're shooting, especially rapid fire, but it'll actually cool down really fast as you heat it up, and with that muzzle brake on it, it literally keeps it right in line.
And I noticed that when you look at it from a top view, that barrel almost looks like it's a collapsed accordion.
Yes.
So you could tell that's where you would, in a way it's fluted, but in a completely different way than we've ever seen before.
Yeah, the way it's been done is so that there's zero compromise to the strength of the barrel.
Right.
When you flute a barrel, you take metal away, which actually weakens the barrel and causes more of a flex of the barrel. It's the best way to explain it. So when you pull the trigger on the firing arm, you have an initial impulse as the projectile's going through. It doesn't really flex until it has exited the barrel, and then it's actually going to bend.
Yeah, you're talking about barrel or
harmonics.
Harmonics, we refer to it as barrel whip.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So this firearm has zero barrel whip. I did the 15 round mag dump on it and handed it to you to out any temperature on the barrel.
No, there wasn't, because we had just discussed that about, you know, the way that you were going to cut out the handguard, and people were worried about, well, they're going to touch the barrel and it's going to be hot. And But I grabbed a hold of kind of everything, and it really wasn't hot. And she had just done a lot of rapid fire. And you can't tell me, because 10 millimeter, you're probably, what, a 190 grain projectile?
Today we were shooting 180s.
Okay, right. So 180s. That's a lot of friction going down a barrel. It'll heat up quick. And that one, that barrel just didn't do it.
Yeah, and these were jacketed rounds.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a lot of rounds to really get to heat up. And even if you do, wait 5-10 minutes and it's cooled back down.
Right. And is that going to help with the life of the barrel? Because we all know that you know, heat and rapid fire will diminish a barrel faster.
To give you an idea, the barrels that we use are made by Hella Enterprises Tactical Ordnance out of St. Helens, Oregon. They also own Olympic Arms. They both drill and go ahead and rifle their own barrels, so they make it forest to my design.
Right.
But I specifically required that they use their Match EV5 pistol rifling in the barrel. The 475 Magnum that you shot had over 3,500 rounds through the barrel, and it's still not affecting the rifling.
Wow.
And the polyagonal rifling does a couple of things. It extends the barrel life. You get a better pressure seal, and you pick up 150 feet per second in velocity.
And what's the twist rate?
I'd have to look.
Sorry, I stumped her. Finally.
I got the gun out in the truck. Give me 5 minutes. I'll go find out. It's a standard 10-millimeter twist weight, but we use it on a 16-inch barrel. So using it on the rifle barrel, you pick up velocity to begin with.
Yep.
If we didn't use the EV5, you'd probably be gaining 130 feet per second. With the EV5, you're probably closer to adding a total of 200 to the average velocity of the 10 millimeter.
Okay, and that gives you a velocity of what?
About 1440, depending on.
So we're 9 millimeter, speeds.
Yeah.
In a 10 millimeter, that's pretty impressive.
With sub minute accuracy. We guarantee that from a bench at 50 yards, I can have you put 10 rounds inside of an inch.
Well, I always caution people when they make guarantees like that, because eventually you're going to get that shooter that can't shit in a bathtub.
True.
But it's reality. I mean, we've seen it time and time again where you get somebody that it doesn't matter how good the equipment is, how good the ammo is. The shooter just can't put it together.
Well, we make it in a 45 auto version, and we introduced the firearm as its initial prototype at Industry Day at the range this year. And at 75 yards, I put 30 rounds in a 3-inch circle offhand.
Perfect. Now you just got to get the gun writer to do it. And let's face it, those guys write, they don't shoot.
Well, we had a lot of people shooting our firearms, and no one was really disappointed.
Perfect. No, the few times that I've been able to shoot your guns, working with Michael Bain and doing some other things, I've always been really impressed and really fascinated and really terrified by the calibers that you come out with.
Well, we also had our Mark II version of our bolt action, the 458 SOCOM Hunter, and its accuracy is even better than the rifle I built for Michael. He had the second firearm that I ever built as a bolt action. And it was scary accurate out to 300 yards for 458 SOCOM. It uses a receiver that is made for us by Pristine out of Canada under contract for us. And it feels like the bolt runs on ball bearings.
Ooh.
Has six locking lugs, dual ejectors, and that's the same receiver we use on everything from 22-250 through our if I make a 475 Magnum, our 475 Magnum.
Okay. So, real quick, let's talk about Ballistic Summit. We kind of had to cajole you guys a little bit to talk you into coming here, but how has Summit been for you?
I haven't had this much fun since SHOT Show.
There you go. I honestly do both, and this will be year 5 or 6 for me. I can't remember at this point. And I actually missed most of it this year because I was teaching a class in Mexico of all places. But I got to come back for the end of this. But I will say that this event is like the most fun thing that I do every year. the people that I get to meet and the just antics that go on here.
I'm hoping to be able to come back. I made a lot of contacts. We have a couple of business ideas that have been floated around that may come into fruition that will be insanely politically incorrect, which I won't say over the air, but you have heard. But the people that I met here are brilliant. They're highly educated. They're well-versed in the industry. And I believe this was the best thing that we could have possibly have done. And I apologize for not doing it sooner.
Well, you had to know about it, right? You know, when we first started doing this, we were going down the list of brand new manufacturers. And we knew about you, but you'd been around, right? Mm-hmm. And you were doing well. And we got through everybody doing the just really crazy off-the-wall stuff. And it was like, okay, you have been crazy and off the wall, and we've got to bring you in. Because if nothing else, this is going to be fun. But the fact that you were able to come here and make contacts and now hopefully get a little bit more media presence, you know, expand your business, especially now. You know, I think this year has been pretty rough on everybody in the firearms industry.
Oh, it's been very slow. The gun store itself, it's holding its own. We're in the black barely. But in all honesty, at this point, we're about $90,000 off of last year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I'm seeing signs of recovery.
Right. And you say that, and that is in alignment with just about everybody that I've talked to this year that's actually still around, because we've seen several guys, big guys, go under.
Yeah.
It's a scary time for firearms, and you know, who knows what's going to happen next year.
Well, we will work. We will hang on and keep moving forward is what we will do.
Well, and that's perfect. And the fact that you guys moved to Pocatello, you're only like 6 hours from my house, so if I need anything, I'm coming your way. And then before we get out of here, I noticed you and Dan with Opal Ammunition have been talking quite a bit, and I'm assuming you guys have something secret squirrel in the works.
Yeah, we do.
And you don't have to tell me. It surprised me. It shouldn't, but that you have now two ammunition manufacturers here at Summit, and now they're collaborating. What could we, you know, what are we in for?
Well, the 475 Magnum has been very low production by us. We've kept the production low on purpose for quality control. Mm-hmm. But the problem that I have is we're getting more and more of these firearms in. Just in the last 2 weeks, I've gotten inquiries for four in actually one order on that. And I have another gentleman swearing he put a check in the mail to us. So we're at two. We've built about 20 of these firearms so far, and not one has come back. No one's complained. And I would like to be able to have factory-made ammunition available to them instead of having it to be match-quality ammunition from me.
Right.
I hand-prime every piece of brass. Every piece of brass is sized, even though it's brand new. I run it through the sizing die. Mm-hmm. I even go so far as to weigh the brass.
Okay, yeah.
Powder's dropped on $1,000 digital trickle scale. That's programmable. And if it comes up instead of 74 grains or 71 grains, I dump it and re-pour it.
Right.
And then I do each cartridge by hand. So everything that was fired today was done by hand by me.
Right. And I knew that. So what you're looking for then is scalability.
Production, yes.
Because you got to be able to feed the beasts that you keep sending out the door.
Yeah, and I've had a lot of...
It's a beast.
We've had several inquiries. Lee makes our dies for it, and I've had them call me and say, hey, I've got like 9 orders for die sets for this rifle. And my question is, because I maintain a list, who? And only one of the 9 was a customer. Marston called and said, hey, you know, they've got people that are wanting to order your Reamer. And I said, no, our agreement was is they had to have a license from me. Because I am not going to let what happened to the 458 SOCOM happen to my cartridge.
Right, right.
It's a high-pressure round. It is a high-pressure magnum round. It's an extremely lethal round. And if it's not loaded to the design specs of what I have determined and worked out through mm-hmm. 4 years of trial and error, it could be a bad thing.
Well, yeah, you were just showing me the load data and the pressure specs on this cartridge. And you were showing me, I think it was maximum load, it's over 60,000 pounds. That's a lot of pressure.
Well, I've actually tested the cartridge up to 79,000
right.
PSI. Bad things do happen.
Right. Yeah, okay. I can imagine. Because, I mean, you're talking the explosiveness of a grenade at that point.
Yes, but I've also thrown a 390-grain bullet at 2,600 feet per second. but it's not any good if you have, you know, brass that comes apart.
Right.
So we would work things down. I always load up to failure. Mm-hmm. And then it worked down into precision.
Right.
And find the sweet spot. And that's where we leave it at.
That makes sense. That makes complete sense. So you, at one point, you talked about potentially retiring the 475. Or just in the bolt?
In the bolt gun.
Okay.
We do have another cartridge that we developed that is a neck down version of the 475. It's called the 375 short magnum.
Okay.
It essentially, think of the 375 H&H Magnum squished mm-hmm. down to the size of a 308 in length.
Okay, yep.
It'll throw a 180-grain bullet at 3,050 feet per second. In designing the cartridge and testing, I tested to the point of failure at 3,480 feet per second. And the bullets were disintegrating coming out of the barrel.
Okay, Chris, what did you do to fix that?
that was before my time. So. Yeah.
Actually, it was Spear.
Okay.
I called up Spear and said, hey, look, I think I got a bad batch of bullets. He goes, well, what do you mean? I said, well, they're disintegrating coming out of the barrel.
Twist rate too fast?
Yeah, well, he asked me, he goes, how fast are you shooting them? I said, well, 3,400 feet per second. And I got silence, just dead air. I think it got disconnected. He goes, out of what? And I explained to him a semi-automatic AR-10. He goes, you're shooting a 375 at 3,400 feet per second out of an AR-10. I said, yes. He goes, slow it down. They're designed for 2,900. So we pulled the speed down on the 235-grain bullet to 2,800 feet per second.
And so how's the accuracy on that? I'm assuming since you got this all worked out, the accuracy is going to be fantastic.
On the Mule gun, which is set up as a bench rest rifle, it's the one I had that I could plug into a computer. Mm-hmm. Rounds touching at 400 yards.
Okay. All right.
Eight rounds touching at 400 yards okay. in testing.
Now we just got to figure out how we can take an AR-15 to South Africa.
Well, the ballistics on this cartridge are strange. It goes subsonic at 1,100.
Right.
At a mile, it is still going 800 feet per second.
Okay. So it's maintaining some stability even out to a mile.
Yeah. And the nice thing about it is that you can use any 375 projectile, so as long as you're not crimping on the ogive and you keep the overall length, the identical length of a 308.
Right. Right. That's perfect. Well, look. Thank you guys for coming.
Oh, it's our pleasure.
And I thank you for coming on the podcast too.
Oh, yeah.
and I hope you guys had an enjoyable time. You said you want to come back.
Yeah.
And I would love to have you back. And next time maybe I'll actually be here and I'll rouse Bane a little bit more.
Well, we're also got a new project that we're working on that is for military and police, mm-hmm. and it's a 308.
You were telling me about this.
Yes, it's a special duty rifle for a sheriff's department. And our goal is to be able to pull in a match grade rifle that you can take and throw in the trunk of a police car, mm-hmm. pull out and still have the same accuracy.
Right. That's going to be incredible. What kind of time frame are you looking at for that?
November 1st at the latest.
I'm in.
We have everything ready to go. It's side charging billet, 308 18-inch barrel.
So this is AR-10.
It is an
AR-10. It's a DMR okay. style okay. type build.
All right, all right.
Yeah, fixed trigger pull weight of 3.5 pounds. Nothing adjustable on it except a gas block if the agency wishes to have an adjustable gas block.
Right.
Everything we do is Cerakoted, so this is going to be armor black Cerakote, the whole thing. And if you sit it out on the counter and look at it, you wouldn't be able to tell. But when you pick it up, there's a lot more to the gun.
You know immediately. That's great. I am excited. So is this something that's going to be available to the public, or is this just simply a contract?
Starting SHOT Show next year, it will be available at the public. We will have it there.
Okay. So SHOT Show, then, we're going to have to interview you so we can get hands-on and check this thing out.
We do have a price point on it, though.
Okay. I'm listening.
Chris, what was it we worked out?
Right now, we're between $2,000 and $2,500 is our goal area to stay with.
Okay. So for a DMR, that's playing, and that's being serious.
Yeah.
That's actually an extremely good price point. I mean, I've built DMRs, and I'm into them twice that.
Now, the barrel, again, is a Tactical Ordnance EV5 match-grade barrel. It's not just an off-the-shelf, inexpensive barrel.
Sure.
I mean, we're into the barrels themselves. Our cost, north of $400 just for the barrel.
And that doesn't surprise me. I mean, at the end of the day, the barrel's where the magic is. You know, anybody that actually shoots anything with any kind of accuracy understands that. It's the barrel is where it happens.
And we do guarantee sub-minute accuracy on the firearm. But you do have to go through a specific break-in procedure that we always tell the owner what to do.
Gotcha. That's awesome. Well, thank you guys for coming on. I'm going to actually kick you guys off, and I'm going to bring Dan in with Opal. And then after that, we're going to be talking to Tacticam. So I've got a long night.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.
It's been fun.
All right, thank you.
All right, so here at Ballistic Summit, we just talked to Marissa Bishop, Bishop Ammunition, and now I've got Dan of Opal Ammunition. And Dan and I we've kind of developed a little bit of a relationship over this year because I was with another ammunition manufacturer who went out of business, and I knew, you know, at one point you had kind of shut down things a little bit because you couldn't get components.
We slowed down a little bit during COVID, predominantly on our 5.56. We're still making the other calibers, but we needed to get a little higher volume out in order to take care of a lot of our existing customers, so we were scaling back and kind of limiting production or limiting distribution during COVID. Our thought was, let's give everybody something so that they can stay in business rather right. than give it all to one or two big outlets and let the other guys die on the vine, because COVID was going to be over eventually,
right.
and we still needed all of our outlets to be selling our product and
right.
in business. So.
So talk to me a little bit about the history of Opal. How long have you been doing it? What got you started in it? You know, gory details.
Okay. Well, back in 2014, my brother approached me. He was living in the town of Opal, Wyoming, about a building that was basically falling into disrepair, an old mercantile building.
Now let me set the stage for you. Opal has like 35 people, and they all work for Opal Manufacturing.
Well, not everybody, but soon they will. We approached the person who had the rights to buy that building, because it was being sold on a tax lien. The mm-hmm. current owner didn't want it. It was falling down. My brother called me, and I said to him, man, that would be a great building to open an ammo factory in. And he said, well, this guy has it, and he wants to sell it, and it's a really good price. So he was trying to sell it to the town, but the town didn't have the money to buy it.
Right.
You know, they couldn't scrape together the money between the 35 people. So
they didn't interview the dogs and the cats.
I don't think so. I don't think so, or any of the moose or elk that were running through
right.
town. So I approached the guy, and I said, look, I want to buy it. And he's kind of like, well, I don't want to get stuck with it if you change your mind. And I'm like, no, I definitely want it. So I agreed to send him half of what he wanted up front and told him, once you get it in your name, I'll send you the other half. It took about a year, but we ended up with the building.
As those things do.
Yeah. And then my son and I spent, well, on a tax lien sale, the previous owner can come back within 2 years and take the property back by paying you what you paid plus 10%.
Sure.
So we basically had to sit in a holding pattern for the better part of 2 years.
Right.
And then we started commuting. We lived in Southern California at the time, so we started commuting back and forth every month, and we'd spend 3 or 4 days long days, like 18-hour days working, because there's nothing else to do in that
right,
town.
Right, oh yeah.
But work. And you'd be surprised how much work you get done when you work for 18 straight hours.
Oh yeah.
So we took this building that was had been blighted by the town, and we brought it back to life.
And I've been in that building. It is a beautiful old building, and the work that you guys have done to it and continue to do to it, it's going to be cool when it's all done.
Exactly. Well, we put a lot of money into it, and it got to the point where I said, you know what, we need to start making ammo now. We can't put any more money into the building. We got to make ammo because right. I need to get some of that money back in the bank so we can keep growing. So at the end of 18, we got our occupancy permit and got approval to go ahead and get working. And we started out with three Revolution loading machines, me, my son, and my nephew. And we started loading three calibers, 38, 40, and 45.
Right.
And we did okay. I mean, it was, we started out November, December of 18, and then COVID hit. And then things got very dicey the first quarter of 18, or 19, I'm sorry, of 19. And then things kind of went crazy because all of a sudden there was no product in the marketplace. And
right.
We had a lot of components, but we didn't have a brand anybody'd heard of. But that didn't seem to matter to people.
I'd heard of it. And in fact, the very first, I think the first three summits that we actually held, we were bringing Opal ammunition to the range.
Yeah, I do remember getting the order from you guys because you guys needed ammo for, and I didn't realize that this summit was what it was for.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I just got the call from probably Brandy,
yep.
Or one of the gals in the office, that you guys needed some ammo and can we get this by this date? And even during COVID, I was like, for you guys, sure. You know? And as we moved on through COVID, I worked day and night hunting components. So where a lot of guys just shut down, mm-hmm. we kept making ammo and kept making ammo. And we came out of COVID pretty well.
Right. Well, when you're the only supply,
yeah,
that's how that works.
Well, we helped a lot of... I'm not one to believe that anybody's my competition.
Right.
I mean, we put out a really good product, so... And there's so much demand for our product out there that you could have 10 ammo manufacturers in Wyoming and we'd still all be making money.
Well, and I've said this before, that if you're not turning your competition into a collaboration, you're doing it wrong.
Exactly. And that's what I did. So when nobody could get primers and I could find primers, I shared, you know, with other OEM guys. Like, they wouldn't let me sell them out into the marketplace, but if they were being used for OEM, we helped where we could.
Right.
And the nice thing about that is other guys came back and said, oh, I got this brass, but I got no projectiles, and this guy's got projectiles and no brass. You know, so we kind of all helped each other to stay afloat.
Right.
Because if we didn't, one in 10 would still be here.
Right.
And you know what? This whole industry really is a collaborative industry. Everybody who helps everybody else out tends to survive, and those who try to go it alone generally end up failing. So,
well, and in this industry, I think we all, you know, it's kind of go back to that Benjamin Franklin. We hang together or we will all hang separately. And that's not just from a business perspective, but our entire industry, our entire way of life has been under attack for a decade now.
Exactly. And what we've tried to do is to reach out and sponsor events within the shooting community. So we're a big supporter of the governor's matchup in Wyoming,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
which is a huge event for the state. It comes around every summer.
Yep.
And we also sponsored three gun matches with other promoters in multiple states. And it's gotten us some very good brand recognition within the shooting community. And then a lot of those folks also do training, like you do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And once they start shooting our stuff, they're kind of like, wow, this is pretty good stuff.
I knew it was good.
Yeah. And so they share that with other folks. And that we're growing kind of organically that way. I mean, we're trying to reach out. We do gun shows. We have stores. It's a lot of work because we're not a big company.
Well, I know. And every time I call you up, you're on the road somewhere. I think last time I talked to you, you were in Southern California.
Yeah. So,
you get around.
I travel from Southern California to Northern Montana, I was in South Dakota, then Billings, Montana, down to Arizona. You know,
your travel schedule sounds like mine.
my wife is like, you know, we spend about 2 days a week at home if we're lucky, and we haven't had a weekend off in 3 months.
Right.
So we need one.
Yep.
And I'm like, it'll come.
So your first summit, you knew about us because we had purchased ammo before. And I'm guessing you probably didn't have a real great idea on what we were all about. But now that you've been and you've kind of seen what we do, what are your impressions of Summit and what were you able to get out of it?
Well, here we are, again, collaborating with other folks from the industry. I mean, I learned a lot from the folks at Lucid Optics. Though I know a lot about ammunition, I'm not an expert when it comes to optics, even how to use them. I mostly have always shot just iron sight stuff. And so kind of getting out here, that was a great learning experience just from what they brought to the table. But on top of that, we met other folks in the industry who are building guns, doing security stuff. It just such a nice variety of folks. You know, some have been around a while, others not as long.
Right.
But again, the collaboration and the sharing, you know, we make a good amount of ammunition. And we started with 3 calibers, we're up to 18. And now it looks like we're going to be contracting to do our 19th caliber.
I heard something about that, and I think it's still a little hush-hush right now, and that's okay.
That could be coming. We're working on it.
But my hope was, and this is why I know when we were in the early talks of this, I was pushing to get you here. I was hoping that the media exposure would help you to actually not have to travel so much.
And I seriously appreciate it, because when you invited and I started reading the information on it, I'm going, you know, I've never done a podcast before. This is my virgin trip into the podcast world.
Oh, so, pop the cherry. So, now we got to throw you into a volcano.
That's it. I will stop the island from being destroyed.
Yeah.
So it's an area where I want to explore more and get into this arena here, because I'm one that is a true believer that we need to bring the better side of the gun business to the marketplace, to social media, to the public, when all they get barraged with was there's been a shooting on Second Avenue,
right,
type
right.
of thing, by a drive-by, or a bank was held up, or, you know, some other tragedy. They don't see the good side of it. They only see the bad side of it.
Right.
And the competition and the skill that you see with these folks who are out shooting is, you know, it's truly a very difficult sport that some people make look very easy. And when you get out there and you try to do what some of these other folks do, and you think you're good until you get out there and you go, oh, yeah, I'm not that good. But but one day I want to be just like them. But, you know, I've been reaching out in my community to, there's a high school shooting team in the next town that does skeet and trap shooting, and I'm trying to help them with getting the supplies that they need. And then the university has a club team.
Mm-hmm.
They're
mm-hmm.
trying to do the same. And we're bringing a new generation of competition shooters into this sport. In addition to the regular tournaments, trying to help the younger generation who's just really learning about this sport,
right,
and how much fun it can be, and the camaraderie that comes with it, because you meet people from all over the country, and there's some pretty interesting people out there that have, you know, great personalities.
I think you met a few of those here.
Yeah, I have.
But you touched on something, and I want to kind of highlight this for our listeners, because, you know, you talked about you want people to see the better part of our industry.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna completely misquote Michael Bain here, but I was at a function with him at one point, and he was talking about how the gun culture is a better culture because it represents what America should be and should aspire to. And to your point of presenting the better part of shooting, we're all ambassadors.
Exactly.
So it's on all of us to put our best foot forward and think not only of ourselves and our brand, but the shooting community as a whole.
and this is part of why I'm so passionate about our tournament sponsorships, our school sponsorships, these type of things, because when we bring those folks into this arena and they start competing, I mean, you look at even the Olympic teams, that we should dominate the world in the sport.
We absolutely should. We get some turkey guy in his sweatpants.
Yeah.
But kudos to him.
So, you know, much like the other sports that are more traditional out there or get more media attention, we need to bring those talented young enthusiastic shooters to the forefront here where they can represent this country and they can show the world that shooting a gun is a skill.
It is. It absolutely is.
Just like shooting a basketball or throwing a baseball or driving a race car, it takes a certain type of person with a certain skill set to really do it at that premier level. Mm-hmm. And we need to, as an industry, we need to help develop that side of the, you know, the business and culture within the United States where people don't look at guns as an evil tool to wreak havoc, but as a tool like a baseball bat in baseball or a golf club in golf. It's the tool of the sport.
Right.
And I think we can do that if we really put our mind to it. There are probably half the country owns guns.
I think more than half.
Probably more than that. And we tend to be quiet about our ownership and our guns. I think somewhat because the media tends to paint us with a broad brush of very evil people, but we're really not.
We're not.
We are some of the best people on the planet, and we're the ones that are the first ones to step up and help out our neighbor. Right. So,
and if you look at it too, our entire culture has a safety record that is unparalleled by anyone. You know, you look at some of these other sports, and a lot of people are going to look and go, well, you know, shooters, they're not true athletes. Yeah, they kind of are because they have to put in that level of work to reach that level of skill.
They absolutely do. And if you were to come out and watch some of these three-gun tournaments where the participant has to work in three different disciplines, mm-hmm. shotgun, pistol, and rifle, through a maze of targets that they have to shoot at around this obstacle, through this obstacle, that way. And you watch the footwork on some of these guys. Ballroom dancers aren't as nimble as some of these guys.
I would put some of these guys, I've seen some of these guys run, and I would put them side by side with, you know, SEAL teams or Delta Force, these guys that do this for a living. Some of these competitors are better. They're faster. They're more accurate.
And with people, I've talked to guys who do this, and they actually have trainers who work with them on their footwork so that every step, I mean, it literally is like a dance that they're mm-hmm. going through. And with balance, with, you know, leaning this way, that way, weight distribution, not tripping. You know, there's so many things to go into it in addition to being able to hold your body steady and take the shot and hit these targets. Till you get out and do it. And I did. The first governor's match that I sponsored, the governor showed up for Wyoming. He wanted to shoot. And I was happy to donate some ammunition, so long as he came over and at least said hi to me. And he did. We talked for a little while. Mr. Gordon is a very, very good guy. I really like him. But he went out. He shot some of the stages. And they asked me, would you like to go try the stages? I said, well, I don't have any of my guns with me, but a couple of the shooters were sponsoring.
Yeah, somebody loaned you one. Yeah.
Loaned me a couple guns. And I did okay on the shotgun. I did okay on the rifle, the pistol. I didn't have my pistols. And, you know, I just didn't feel comfortable with their guns.
Oh, there you go.
So,
there you go. Blaming the gun.
So I was using the best ammo, though. So
you know that's our motto on this show, right, is keep blaming the gun?
Keep blaming the gun. Yeah, can't blame the ammo. It was too good.
yeah, there you go.
No. But I realized how difficult doing this really is. And had I kind of initially watched them from my little perch point, watching the shooters go by. And I'm sitting there going, oh, that doesn't look too hard. That doesn't look too hard. But when I got out there and did it, it's like night and day. I mean, you really see what they have to go through to prepare to do this. And even if all their footsteps are right and they have the calmness, one little malfunction on their gun,
mm-hmm. they're done.
And they're done for the whole match. And so there's so much variable they have, and then you still have that other side of it, which can be very disappointing. The last governor's match, they actually had a group of teens that mm-hmm. were competing, juniors, I guess you call them.
Yep.
And kids have to learn all the rules, and the rules are very stringent.
They are.
If you don't put your gun in the barrel right, or you point it in the wrong direction, you disqualify from that stage.
Right now.
Right, you're done. And these kids work real hard, and they're like 12, 13, 14 years old, and one of them did something wrong with his rifle. He got DQ'd, and he was very bummed. But it was a great learning experience for him. This was his first tournament, and his dad was a shooter and had been working with him quite a bit. And you know what? Next time he comes out, he won't make that mistake again.
Right.
But he's, I see him in 5 or 10 years. He's going to be at the top of his game, right. and be one of the premier, probably one of the premier shooters in the industry. So.
And let me ask you this, because you probably saw this too. You say that, he got DQ'd and he was really bummed about it. But I would bet that the level of maturity that he showed, even though he had gotten DQ'd, he knew what he did, he owned up to it, and just went, okay, I'll do better on the next one, rather than what we see in a lot of these youth sports anymore. A lot of these kids, they'll throw a fit, they get mad, they start throwing things, yelling, and if they don't, their parents do.
No.
But I think, especially with firearms, I think it develops maturity much, much faster than any other sport.
Well, it does. And when you're much like when I was a kid, my dad taught us, the do's and don'ts for shooting and handling guns and the whole nine yards. You learn from a very young age the responsibility of holding a firearm.
That's right.
And using a firearm. And there are kids in this country who have never been exposed to it.
Right.
And they are scared to death of them because mm-hmm. all they see is really bad things on TV. But the kids who are exposed to it, they do mature faster. They are more respectful. And this young man was up there at the awards ceremony helping out the folks who were handing out the awards. Even though he was DQ'd,
right.
he was still right up front and very much a part of it. His dad was just like, he got DQ'd. It just happens.
Yep.
And he was like, he's learning. And he goes, he's a little disappointed, but he knows, he's learning. And right. and not like you said, some of these parents in sports, their kids don't get to play, an extra 2 minutes in a game or they didn't get to play the position they wanted to and the parents are complaining to the coaches. No, he just took his lumps and said, I've learned my lesson. I won't do that again.
Right.
So,
and something you said, you talk about the maturity level and growing up with guns, and I was the same way, and I think kids that are exposed and educated about firearms, and I guess I'm half asking, but when I grew up, like we knew, we knew how to respect and everything, but we understood it was a tool,
right?
No different than the hammer in a toolbox. It had a purpose, and you didn't mess with it except for that purpose.
Correct.
And I think, you talk about kids that they have no access and they're afraid of it. I've always said that education is the answer to that.
It absolutely is. And looking at the kids who I've met who have started from a very young age with them, they're not afraid of them. They respect them. And it's much like driving a car. If you're taught right, you will respect that car because it's as deadly as a gun is.
That's right.
And the kids who are taught to respect the guns from a very young age understand that. And it carries through pretty much every phase of their life. So they're not only learning the respect of a gun, but they also recognize a car can be just as deadly.
Right.
You know, doing stupid stuff that they shouldn't be doing can be, you know, with just about anything out there. And all of us grew up doing stupid things. So,
if you didn't,
even though we shoot guns, we still didn't do stupid things. But you do learn more of a sense of responsibility when you're taught.
You're absolutely right. So before we get out of here, where do you see the future of Opal going?
Well, right now we're working on putting up a new building because right now we QC everything by hand.
I saw the new machine, but your son told me that it had to be placed on a solid concrete base.
Yes. So we got our foundation, the walls and the roof up, a couple of windows in the building. Doors aren't here yet. Nor electricity, but we're very close. We're probably about 2 months away from having that building.
You better hurry because it's going to get cold.
The doors are coming next week, so at least we'll have the
You'll
war.
Be sealed in.
We'll be closed up in there. Once we get this new QC machine in, it will QC up to 280 rounds a minute,
which is
phenomenal. So we can do so much by hand. I mean, the average guy sitting with a bucket of ammo and a case gauge block to inspect and case gauge ammo, if they're really good, they can get through 18,000 rounds a day.
This will do it in an hour.
Yeah, in less than an hour, it has all that done and then some. So it's going to take where our choke point is, which is QCing,
right,
and open it up to just fourfold, fivefold production. And that is going to grow us dramatically. Eventually, I'd like to see us building our own brass factory and our own projectile factory, try to integrate those components to help us become more competitive. Also, I'm such a big fan of high-quality ammunition. I want to be able to maintain the quality of those components myself. So that's down the road. But we just keep building a little at a time. And though it's been a short 6 years, because it seems like it went by in a blink of an eye, I think in the next 3 or 4 years, we're taking that jump into the stratosphere from where we're at now, and I see really big things for the company. I'm very excited about our growth.
Well, I'm excited for you, and I hope as you become one of the big dogs in the industry, you don't forget about us little people that need ammo here and there.
Hey, you got my cell number. Anybody calls, they know. I take care of everybody. I treat everybody more like their family than customers. So,
you do.
So that when they call and they say, I need it, if I've got it, you've got it type of thing. So, you know, we just keep that mentality of taking care of really the little guys. The big guys will take care of the really big stores. I want to take care of the little guys. So, you know, that's my goal in life, is just take care of the small mom and pop shops to medium size, and then all of the guys who do training. We do a lot of law enforcement stuff now, which is a huge part of what we do, which I'm very proud of. I love our guys in blue. They get out there and they risk their life every day for us, and whatever I can do to help them, I try to do that every day. So
before we get out of here, mm-hmm. where can people find you?
Our website is www.opalammo.com. We do ship to most states. California is an exception. We have to ship to an FFL there. There's a few other cities around the country that limit it.
We don't talk about them.
But for the rest of you folks out there, feel free to go on. We will ship. We generally ship within 48 hours of your order coming in, unless it's like Friday night at midnight, then it's going to be Monday.
Yeah, but even then, he's harping on me. When are you going to come pick this up?
That's right. Yeah, we do allow people to come out to the building. We don't have a store yet, but eventually we will have a store in our building where people can actually come in and purchase. But if you ring the bell and you need ammo, we will answer and we'll take care of you. So
there you go. And you get to visit the booming town of Opal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, it's up to 64 people. So
hey,
it's,
that's like double.
It's almost double. Well, that's in the summertime. In the wintertime, we go back down to 35.
Ah, there you go. Well, Dan, thank you so much. And I hope Summit was good for you.
This was a great experience. I loved it. I love what you guys are doing. I love how you're bringing in all these folks in the industry together to work together. We all learn a little bit. We all collaborate, come up with great ideas that we can share. And, you know, if I can help somebody else out that I meet here, I've made new friends, and I'm going to help them. And in turn, I know it all comes back to you.
Right.
So if you're a good person out there, good things happen to you. Good Lord looks out for you and he takes care of you. So
couldn't said it better myself.
Okay.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you much.